This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm Aaron, and I don't know what Nate is laughing about, but I'm joined by Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. Would you like to let us in on the joke, Mr. Epitasis?
Well, do you have the stream up while we're streaming live here?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my little singing did come through right at the very beginning of the stream. Okay. when Mike was silently counting you down and I was singing Kanye West's RoboCop in the background.
Sure.
So that's what I was laughing at.
You're laughing at yourself, at your own thing.
Well, I really thought I was early enough that it wasn't going to get on the stream here, but clearly I was mistaken.
Well, otherwise, how are you, Nate? How's your evening?
Evening's pretty good. I cooked some chicken and broccoli and rice for dinner. I don't understand how people cook all the time, because now there's like 16 dirty dishes in my fucking kitchen.
Yeah, dude, that's what it does.
So yeah, after we get done recording here at 11 p.m., then I'll start the dishes. Down to 4 work emails. So that's pretty good. Approaching inbox zero on that. What's going on with you?
I also cooked tonight, although SB and I tag teamed it a little, so it was slightly easier. But it's her week to do the dishes, so I don't have to worry about that shit. So don't care how many dirty dishes I make.
SB owned.
That's right. I will offer to cook more elaborate dishes on the week that it's her turn to do the dishes.
That's just good strategy. Tactical thinking.
And then like when it's my week, it's like Friday, and I'm like, we should order something out maybe. What do you think? Yeah. So good week for me overall. Also joined by Mike Spears. What's up, Mike Spears?
Hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. I like doing dishes. It's something that, like, I'm someone that I find doing, like, repetitive acts is kind of, like, calming. And it's something that, like, I have to do dishes constantly right now, even though I live by myself, because I constantly have to clean dog bowls, I have to clean like all of that sort of stuff. So that's fine. However, I ordered out I had like my first burger in about 5 months, and it was amazing today. So
Big Show? Mr. Big Show burger?
No,
Mr. Showbeast burger?
Mr. Showbeast. I know there was a meme, and I just didn't know what it was. God damn it.
It wasn't a Mr. Beast burger. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. But I just got Five Guys, and it's not like I got like a special burger, but it's something that I was just like, I don't know if this is actually a true thing, but you ever get like the feeling like occasionally, and I know Aaron, this isn't really a thing for you, but you like, it's either like the iron deficiency or something where you just have like a real hankering for like a burger or like just like red meat. Like that happens to me very rarely now, as I've been slowly edging myself towards, and I realize me saying that, I'm just like, oh, I shouldn't have just said that. But as I'm like slowly turning to vegetarianism, but it's something that like, I was like, I haven't had like a burger in the longest time. So.
Yes, I do. I do know the feeling as a current meat eater. I don't like doing the dishes. There are some menial tasks I enjoy because they're like just repetitive and you kind of get in the zone and it's, has like productive feelings on your brain or whatever. But doing the dishes is not one of them for me. I'm trying to think of what one of them is.
I was going to say, I can't think of one.
there's like some menial paperwork I have to do at work sometimes. And that's like, if I just do like 10 of those in a row and just becomes like almost a half-assed meditation, experience or something. Cause it's just so, mindless, I guess, but yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to know more about the menial tasks we enjoy, make sure you follow us on Twitter at everything AEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast, whatever podcast app you use. Make sure you get these as soon as they come out, now on Thursday mornings, generally. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and a review, please. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do so is to head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. We'll talk more about that later, but it rules. There's a lot of good stuff there. It's a good month to join up, so join us. We'll do how we do things here on the Everything Elite show, and that is starting with Elite or Delete, where we talk about what our favorite, least favorite things from the show were. And I like to start with Nate. Nate, can you tell me what your favorite thing, your elite pick of this show was?
Yeah, easy one. Real layup for me here. The whole show was basically the main event. There were other things that happened. I did watch them, but you know, the early reports going around were that the main event was going to be a blowaway match. And the main event delivered. It delivered on Space Force One's hype, saying it's too good. I won't even tell you what happens. But Britt Baker, Thunder Rosa, went out, had a kick-ass death match in the main event. You know, Thunder Rosa have always said her matches are reliably good because she just always lays shit in, always looks like she's beating the shit out of her opponent, always looks like she's, you know, working hard and going from one thing to the next. And Britt Baker was fucking right there with her. They had crazy bumps, lots of blood, thumbtacks. Rebel took a table bump. They had the Death Valley driver on the ladder is a sick spot in any context, in any match, in any promotion. That would be a wild spot, and it looked crazy here. It was the fucking blowaway match. Certainly a deserving match to be the first women's main event on a card. Yeah, both women came away looking like superstars from this. You know, back when they booked All In, I think that there was a report that the Young Bucks basically wanted to do their match against the World's Cutest Tag Team again on that show. And of course, you know, this promotion and the Young Bucks have, you know, officially disavowed Joey Ryan and Candice LeRae has gone off to NXT to retire. But you know, this was the modern equivalent of that match where you just have two women, blood pouring down their faces, and they just look like huge badasses because of it.
Yeah, the brutality that happened with this was really special, and it really elevated both Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa in this. And it's something where like Rebel, like picking her spots and like being like the excellent manager of like always like kind of like staging things in a way, like she was like getting the chairs, like she had the crutch ready to like buy time and draw attention, and then her bump was great. Then it just was like a real like masterclass and a strong TV plunder match. Like this is something that you know, through the years we've kind of seen like it have its ebbs and flows, and AEW's willingness to just like put the foot on the pedal and just gun it on these matches is something that I've really, really enjoyed. And it's something that after the barbed wire exploding ring death match and how that fell flat after everything, this felt like how lights out matches have been in this promotion. This matches up with everything else that has been done before. And that might have been like the most amount of tacks I've seen come out of one bag if it wasn't like a straight up tacks match. You know, like that was like an insane amount of tacks that like were embedded like fully into Britt Baker's shoulder for like the last like 2 minutes of the match. It wasn't like one of those things where it's like, oh, okay, there's like some tacks that it looks like you can tell like they landed on it or like where the point of contact was. They were in the thumbtacks. And then, yeah, the Death Valley driver is something that I don't know if they're willing to put this in the opening, but I feel like that and then the face of like Britt Baker with like one of a excellent, like what I assume to be a blade job there, like just having the absolute proverbial crimson mask, like that should be in the opening, because if anything, this is something that like elevated Britt Baker through defeat in this match, and Thunder Rosa instantly with like the whole situation of AEW and NWA being kind of like a giant question mark has like staked her claim definitively in this division and in this promotion, that this was satisfying. And I'm excited to see where all three of them go after this now. Like, it was an unmitigated success across the board. And I think, and this is just like a personal taste thing, I think with the exception of Omega versus Fenix, this is like neck and neck as the AEW match of the year in 2021 already.
Yeah, this morning on Light, which we do on the Everything Elite Patreon every Wednesday morning, I was concerned about all the hype for the match, in part because I was thinking, well, in all the other like unsanctioned matches they've done, there's been a pretty reasonable level of violence. And I was skeptical that they would be willing to do that level of violence on television in their main event between two women. I wasn't sure, you know, what will Turner think about this? What does Tony think about this? We know that Tony famously, didn't want to have intergender in this promotion because he hated seeing Jordan Grace get punched at All In. So, you know, what level of violence was he going to permit between two women? And they went like above and beyond. Basically, I mean, anything they've done purposefully on Dynamite, I mean, I can't think of things that were this bloody. I mean, I know Britt got reasonably bloody before, but it was on accident. But they certainly met the level of violence that they've done in previous matches, which is a feather in their cap. And, you know, if you want to separate yourself from the WWE women's division, for example, this is one way to do it. This is certainly nothing you will ever see in WWE. I think a lot about AJ Styles talking about when he was in TNA. He was like, oh, yeah, we should do the six-sided ring because WWE does four-sided. They don't do unprotected chair shots, so we should. And like, okay, that's maybe dumb, but
maybe not the best two examples.
No, those are bad examples. But I like what he's saying. It's like, we have to be everything they're not, because of course, a big failure of TNA's was trying to be like WWE light, you know? So AEW, the women's division that they have put together for right now can't outshine, and I don't watch NXT, but it can't outshine, I'm assuming, the NXT women's division in the ring a lot of the times. There is no Io Shirai in this promotion. But they can do much cooler things. They're much more willing to do stuff that hasn't been done before and let these people shine. Rosa must obviously be signed to the company in some way, right? There's no other way they're letting her beat Britt Baker, who has been the focus of the division since day one, unless they view her as having a long-term future in the division. But whatever, it was great. Yeah, certainly going to be up on match of the year list. It should be. It was awesome.
Because you said it twice there, I'm curious. Can you define what your standard of reasonableness is for blood, Aaron?
What did I say before?
You said, oh, she got reasonably bloody, or this. I knew this match was going to be reasonably bloody.
I mean, the biggest thing I'm trying to do is I have a very bad memory. So I'm trying to set the standard, or, you know, set the expectations low of what might actually have happened in the past in case I'm not remembering it very well. She got pretty bloody with like the broken nose, right?
Yeah.
But this was more bloody than that, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, this was extremely bloody. Yeah. I had more faith in Space Force 1 than you did, because I believe they said that Britt was basically unrecognizable by the end. So I, like, knowing that, I felt pretty confident, like, oh, they're like, if they went to that length in this match, that, like, there is a novelty element or a shock element where it's like seeing the women go that hard and bleed that much kind of puts the match over the top in its own way. Like, you know, the work was all great and the layout of the match was all great, and you were engaged and excited from moment to moment, and they came up with a bunch of original ideas to do, and, you know, had a cool finish with the fucking driver through the table and everything. But that's all on top of, like, oh, it, you know, if Britt Baker bleeds all over the ring, this is going to be a memorable match, and for that reason alone, it will be good. So I had more faith in that occurring. But I was, like, it is kind of shocking that TNT is like, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Put that on. It's like, pretty remarkable.
I mean, it's something that, as we are kind of slowly meandering to the fact that, to my knowledge, that there's going to be some sorts of rights negotiations in 2022, that the level of cooperation between AEW and Warner Media at this point. Like, if you put aside like how badly mangled the whole Bleacher Report thing is something that like makes you think of, huh? Like that they seem to be on the same page here, because this is something that absolutely, even if the women's division in WCW when they had it was at a level to do this, this absolutely could not have happened on Nitro or on Thunder. But the thing that kind of struck me was this feud deserved this stipulation. This feud deserved the blood. This feud deserved like this. Like it was something that like I came out of this match completely satisfied with this. Like they told a story across the several months that, and it had like a great blow off that got time and that they went for it, and everything in this match and everything in this feud now feels so earned, and that's why I think that everyone comes out of this in a lot stronger position than they did coming into it.
I don't think I've ever turned around on someone as much as I've turned around on Britt Baker. I thought she was very bad at All In. I thought at the beginning of this promotion, she was very bad. And she first turned, I mean, those first interviews where she was like turning heel, I thought were miserably bad. And she developed that character. But now, like, I don't know, this is like old school fan bullshit, but I'm like, ma'am, that blade job just makes me respect you. Like, I just think you're a fucking badass now. And you're just like, she is cool to me now, yeah, at this point, in a way she wasn't,
Aaron?
Absolutely not before.
Aaron, would you pull a Case low and just hand her $20 and walk away out of respect now? That's the question.
No, I anticipate she has a lot more money than I do. considering
she have two full-time lucrative jobs at the same time.
you're not playing in my space.
I would give her a non-worker's handshake and tell her I respect her.
I'm sure that means a lot to her from some random fucking guy.
Well, I'm sure she's been listening and has been hurt by some of my criticisms of her.
You might have turned her off at the beginning of the show. I can only defend her so much.
Britt, come back. This is a Britt Baker respect zone at this point. She's a badass. That's all there is to it.
We did. We talked on the Patreon about potential like other women we'd like to see added. You know, one of those evergreen topics. When it comes to AEW, but I think this opens the door for like your Miyako Matsumotos, Nagayos, maybe your Hikari Noahs, and let's get the AEW women's deathmatch division going here.
I'm thinking of just becoming a deathmatch person. Like, I feel like all my favorite matches of late have just
been
death matches. So, but I think if I watch too many of them, it would probably get old, right?
You can get desensitized to like the spectacle of it really quickly, or by watching a lot of early 2000s IWA Mid-South like I did.
Yeah, I don't know. I've found that the more violent the match is recently, I have enjoyed it much more. So might become a deathmatch guy thinking about it.
This does not seem especially new for you, I have to say.
No, you think that's been a long-term thing for me?
Kind of, you know, certainly the violence part of it.
I like violence.
Yeah, no, you say that a lot. You're often railing against safety geeks and things like this.
Oh yeah, I hate that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't think this is novel.
Okay. It's
but,
just.
It's yeah, I'm
getting worse. Maybe.
Yeah, that might be it. You might be devolving. Is that an appropriate word?
Yeah,
everything
sure.
Devolves.
This could also, I mean, does it open up the possibility of like, you see this, let's say you work in NXT or whatever right now, and you're like, oh, you can literally do like whatever over there, like you can do what you want to do there. So I mean, maybe it like opens up, the women's division hasn't been great to this point, but maybe it opens up a thing. I mean, I think we're seeing it maybe with like you know, Darby and Moxley are always talking about, oh, it's like super free here, you can like, you can do the things you want to do. We see guys like Paul Wyatt and Christian coming over. It's like, oh, maybe this opens up the possibility of women making the jump because maybe there's less of a role or less of an avenue for them in WWE, and they see that they could have more freedom here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that will always be appealing to wrestlers to have the freedom to do what they want, especially, you know, WWE seems to really confine and constrict what you're able to do in basically every context. Maybe women wrestlers is the only exception, just because the sheer amount of time that WWE has to fill and the comparative amount of time that AEW has for women. Like, I mean, granted, there are, you know, 60 women in the performance center or whatever, but, you know, between Raw, SmackDown, NXT, you're more likely as a woman to find some available time just to, like, be on the program at all in WWE. I do think, I think it's great that Adam Cole hasn't been in this company, just because it's really given Britt Baker a chance to, like, shine and become a star as a solo performer. You know, going back to, like, All In, a lot of the crowd's knowledge of her was like, oh, that's Adam Cole's girlfriend. You know, like every fucking idiot wrestling crowd does. It's like, oh, you know, that's Adam Cole's girlfriend. That's CM Punk's wife. And she didn't shy away from that. You know, she did the super kick, had a cool super kick in this match. You know, I think might have even done like Britt Baker baby at one point or another. But now it's like, you don't think about it really at all. Just like, no, like Britt Baker is one of the, you know, two things I'm most looking forward to seeing on this upcoming episode of Dynamite. And, you know, who gives a fuck who she's dating or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, this very well could just be my bubble. Like I said, I don't watch NXT, but Britt Baker is just, and I've always hated Adam Cole, but Britt Baker is just like way cooler than Adam Cole, right? In 2021.
Well, yeah, she does not have a gamer cave.
No, she does not. Which she finally gets rid of Adam Cole and starts dating Ricky Starks. That'll really change the game. Okay. Mike, your elite pick for this week.
Yeah, so it's kind of a difficult week just because there is one very obvious thing. But I'll talk about something that I really enjoyed, and that is how awesome Jade Cargill looked tonight. There was a little bit of heeing and hawing about the fact that she was back in the crowd at Revolution, and then they instantly, like, she has a mega superstar entrance. She comes in and just, like, does not give anything to Danny Jordan. Danny Jordan was there to make Jade Cargill's moves look awesome, and then her finish looked great, and then she immediately got into Red Velvet's face, and it just was something that, like, I'm very happy that after, like, the last week where, like, she had this huge debut match and then there just really wasn't a follow-up for her because of Revolution and the post-Revolution show, that it's continuing to look strong. She's someone that, like, this was going to be a match that, Aaron, we talked about, like, this is a lot trickier than the match with Shaq and Cody Rhodes and Red Velvet, which was obviously very, very scripted and planned out here. This is just like a pure squash match, and I think that that's like another like huge check in the box of like Jade Cargill's career. Is like, all right, we understand how to present her, and she follows through her end of the bargain. And then also Danny Jordan, she bumped like an absolute just crazy person in that match and came away. And I came away with that going like, all right, yeah, no, Jade Cargill eventually like is going to go on like this insane run, and she's just going to completely destroy everyone, and I can't wait.
Yeah, that was, you know, I think the Shaq match was like a pretty good introduction for her, just because it was the, hey, I'm in this really big featured match with the big outside celebrity thing. But I just want to see her squash people, have said it many times, in, you know, 3 minutes for like 4 months. Just, you know, just Goldberger Foley, just have her German suplexing people onto their heads and then kipping up and flexing. I'm obsessed with Pro Wrestling Noah copying Jade Cargill's logo for their new logo. That every time I see it, I just go, oh, you wish you were Jade Cargill. So those are my thoughts on Muto as GAC champion. Jade Cargill, very cool.
Yeah, she rules. This is another time, I know we say this a lot, where it's like, man, I would love to have a crowd for this. I feel like the crowd would go nuts for Jade Cargill, and it would, you know, half of the Goldberg thing was just like how insane the crowds were for him. I was one of them. I mean, I wasn't there, but I was at home. I was very excited. Basically now I'm also at home, very excited for Jade Cargill. So yeah, this ruled. Danny doing the thing right before, like, I'm not scared of you. You know, it's very funny. Danny's great. Big Danny fan. Okay. Yeah, Jade Cargill is very good. There isn't a lot left. This was a weird episode of Dynamite where I really was like, eh, this was okay. And then the main event happened. I was like, this fucking rocked. You know, it erased all the bad. So
it's all you need is a good ending. But half the show turns on the ending.
That's true. You got to just keep me enough so that I'm still like interested in the main event, right? And then if the main event delivers, it's good. I'll shout out, you know, I'm just enjoying the John Moxley and Eddie Kingston team, them goofing around. Eddie maybe was a little cheesy in his part of the promo here, but I still just, I love their energy together. They're riffing off each other. They're just fun. I like them. And it was like, it was a match I was really looking forward to because I don't think they've tag teamed together before, right? So that was pretty cool. You got them in there with the Good Brothers, which also adds like a level of freshness. There's a lot of cool around this team right now.
Yeah, very, very fun little promo. You know, when Moxley came into the company, his whole thing is that he was kind of, you know, the lone renegade guy. You know, he didn't have a stable like the Elite or the Nightmare Family or all these other factions, the Dark Order. And, you know, you can imagine them putting him with somebody and it just feels like a phony put on or whatever. Like Darby, they half-assed made a move to do and then it didn't really ever happen. But Eddie Kingston, like, feels like an appropriate, you know, right hand of John Moxley or whatever. Like, it feels genuine between those guys. They play off each other well. And they just have, you know, the sort of, you know, John Moxley, like the no bullshit personality or whatever, but he's also like a funny guy. And that just fits very well with Eddie. I popped big for all the specific references to the Good Brothers, because if you listen to the Patreon, I'm just a real big mark for Luke, the big Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows, and Machine Gun Carl Anderson's shit. It tickles me in a way that very little else does. And so them talking shop and mania or whatever, just very amusing and fun to me.
It's something where you get this chemistry there between the two of them that I find pretty remarkable in a way that it doesn't, they're able to kind of do a little bit of jokey humor. And that's something that, you know, the most dangerous thing that anyone has ever told in wrestling is that people think you're funny. And the idea of Eddie just doing like reactions in the background to John Moxley talking about wanting to be in a hot tub and drinking Mai Tais cracked me up. And then, yeah, as Nate said, just the way that they very specifically and pointedly like pointed out things about the Good Brothers came off very, very like it came off really organic. And that's something that sometimes in AEW, like when like these team ups happen, it kind of feels a little bit forced, like how that whole Darby thing with Moxley kind of felt like, all right, these are big baby faces in a way. And they had that particular vibe. But it just was something that they had probably the promo of the week last week, and now they have another one here. And the whole storyline and how it's kind of tying into with the overall Bullet Club kind of drama part 7 actually kind of comes off like a little bit more authentic because of like Eddie in there, like Eddie like getting so mad about getting his leg pilmanized that he's like screaming at Bryce Rensburg to let him back in the ring to stand tall with Moxley because he wants to like give them the idea that you couldn't take me down. And it's like a good vibe that I feel like that these two work on. And it's something that I find really interesting with the direction of Kenny Omega for the next few months before we go to Double or Nothing. And it does feel like that with like Eddie's angle, like he's not going to be built up as an immediate challenger. But I think that that's a card in their hand that I really hope that they play, because I feel like that could be a very interesting program if they decide to do so.
I should have hit this earlier, but the listener Elite. Listener, I am the table. Elite's Space Force 1 not spoiling the main event match, which I don't read the spoilers. I try to avoid them, but I had seen some comments about there not being a spoiler of the main event match. So, but I guess they did say that Britt was unrecognizable.
Yeah,
as you mentioned.
I told you what was in it. They basically said this was, you know, a crazy match. Britt was basically unrecognizable at the end. People gave it a standing ovation after the taping was over. I'm not going to spoil anything else, basically.
Yeah, so, okay, well. Sorry, that really, Mike sent me a chat and it really confused me. I thought my phone was ringing and I was just all fucked up.
I'm trying to produce silently, Aaron.
Yeah, completely... I know, sorry. But I mean,
it whooshes and it was right in the gap of Aaron transitioning to something else. And
it just... that's why I tried to like slide it in there so he could see it out of the corner of his eye and he can be like, okay, yeah, whatever. But I guess...
I don't have the chat up while we're doing the thing, so you got to go search for it.
Well, between Mike...
Personally.
trying to slide it in and slowly edging himself. He's really...
Oh, my God. Up on this.
I don't know, we're going to start the not being mean to Mike fan club. Y'all know I don't always have a good way of words, and I kind of stick. I'm done. I just stopped myself from...
All right, good. Let's ad read.
Okay, but you know what Mike is good at sometimes? Betting on sports, folks. He's done pretty well over at our friends, MyBookie. They want you to know that March is here. The madness has officially begun. It's time for you to shoot your shot and score big with MyBookie. That's right. There's going to be 63 tournament games. They also have a bracket contest, a chance at 10 grand in cash. Only costs you a dollar to enter. So it doesn't matter if you want to do the brackets, you want to just bet on the total, you know, the overall winner of the tournament. You're looking for player or game props. They've got it. All you got to do is sign up at mybookie.ag. Use the promo code ELITE to secure a deposit bonus up to $1,000. But make sure you use our promo code so they know that we're the ones that got you to sign up. That's very helpful to us. The promo code is ELITE to claim your first deposit bonus. There's tons of other stuff to bet on too. I personally will be continuing to pretend the NCAA tournament is not occurring this year. I understand that it has actually been canceled, but apparently, you know, in Kentucky, they have historic horse racing you can bet on. You can like go to a place and bet on horse races that have already happened because we don't have sports betting here, but you can do that.
Wait,
somehow.
Hold up.
Let me finish this bit first. So that's what I assume is actually going on with this quote unquote tournament. It's actually old basketball games they're letting you bet on, but go wild. Promo code ELITE, mybookie.ag.
Are the results of these old races not public?
Yeah, and the fact that the Kentucky Derby happens in Louisville, Kentucky, and you can bet at that there. What the fuck?
Yeah,
just
well,
what
you
the fuck?
You can bet on horse racing in Kentucky, like live horse racing. I guess you can also bet on stuff at other tracks. But this is something different, where it's like a slot machine, but something...
Okay.
I don't really fucking understand it, but something about it is based on the results of like old horse races.
Okay. I totally understand what you're saying. Florida used to have this. It was something that the slot machines, because bingo was legal. So technically they would to do like a slot machine and have like a slot machine, and how they worked it was that it was basically programmed to do like a quick bingo game, and that resulted in what the reels landed on. So I guess maybe the RNG for the slot machines in Kentucky are based off of that, and is going to like a database and using that as like justification there, and like saying like,
okay,
you like that? Okay.
Well, they did this. I don't really understand the whole thing, because years ago,
You
could have some sort of slots like at places where you could bet on horse racing.
Right.
To try to like get around that, because we can't. It's been very hard trying to legalize sports betting here or any sort of gambling outside of that. So anyway, the Supreme Court of Kentucky said you can't do this historical horse racing anymore. So the legislature in like days passed a bill making it legal. immediately.
I mean, like, it's something like with like sports betting that like Florida, of course, like they finally shut down the dog tracks. And like that was a big
thing.
It's something that like completely anachronistic, and just like I got dragged to one as a kid, and it was one of the more depressing experiences of my life.
But very gross.
It's something that like the big like dog track lobbying wasn't really like doing it for the greyhounds. They were doing it because that they had poker rooms there, because poker has been legalized in Florida for a long time, and that's where they actually made their money. So like, eventually they decided, okay, we'll transfer all of your track licenses to poker room thing, and then became a big thing because a lot of the other gaming in the state of Florida is done by the Native American tribes, and like the Seminole Nation in particular. Like the Seminole Nation now owns the Hard Rock, like because casinos. So it became its own to do much like that. So welcome to our gambling corner.
So I have on the subject of old horse races, I have something that's a little more germane to wrestling, which is, of course, that Cyber Agent, the Japanese media conglomerate that owns Cyber Fight, meaning Pro Wrestling Noah and DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro and everything. They have a horse racing, of course, one of the public sports in Japan that they can bet on. But they've developed a multimedia franchise related to horse racing, which of course means that the horses are all pretty girls who sing and dance. It's called Uma Musume or something like that.
I was gonna ask if there was a horse idol group, but I guess you already answered that.
No, they're all the horse girls are idols. So if you win the big race, then you go on stage and you do a sing and a dance before you get your trophy. But yeah, all the horses are also based off real life horses, and they just have the names of old classic great racehorses or whatever.
So someone's secretariat, the leader has to be secretariat, right?
I'm not sure that secretariat is one, but I don't know. There's one called Gold Ship or something. That's just the meme one. But they've also determined that the plots and the results of the big important races are also based on real life races. So you can spoil yourself by looking ahead and seeing which horses win which big races and shit. So when you said that you can bet on old horse races, I'm like, well, that's kind of what you're doing in the horse girls idol racing game when you pull from the loot box to try and get the valuable horse.
I have one more horse thing before we move on. That just remember.
Let's just do this for the rest of the show.
So before Double or Nothing 2019, it was myself, my brother, and then we met up with Brett and Brian, friends of the show from Street Fight, and Drew and I found fake horse racing where they basically have little robots that go around a track and you like throw bets on, and it was one of the funniest things in the world. Was this, and it was not like at the good casinos, by the way. This is like at Fremont Street, at the tail end of Fremont Street, like when you're just really almost getting into towny casinos there. But Drew and I sat there for like 30 minutes playing like this horse casino, this fake horse thing where you were betting on basically motorized horses going around thing. It was like a whole, like, I think it was made by Konami of all things. And it just was a very tremendous thing.
Pachinko, yeah. Overlords, Konami.
Exactly. I would love to play some pachinko, by the way.
This is my horse story. SB, wife of the show, used to work at a horse magazine. Obviously, we lived in Lexington, which is the horse racing capital of the world. She worked at a horse racing magazine. And I was trying to look up because I couldn't remember what horse it was. But Barbaro. You guys remember Barbaro?
Oh, yeah. They had to put him down, right?
Yeah, he won the Derby. Then he broke his leg during the Preakness. And was ultimately...
It was the Belmont. He broke it because he won the Preakness and he was going for the Triple Crown and then broke his leg then, I thought.
No, he broke his leg in the Preakness.
Okay, never mind.
For sure. I was a horse person at one point. But anyway, so this woman calls and she says that every night since Barbaro died, she turned off all the lights and lit candles all over her house and sat in the bathtub and like seanced with Barbaro, like trying to speak to Barbaro from beyond the grave.
That rules. That's great. Like living her truth, communing with a dead horse, seances. I love it.
Sure. She just fucking loved Barbaro, I guess.
Another horse thing. I used to drive by a Secretariat Lane, like in the Chicago suburbs. It was like, you know, a residential development. It's like, I don't know. The horse doesn't know you named a street after it.
No, I mean, it doesn't really know any. Well, horse people will tell you, like, horses know that they win races and shit like that.
I mean, I can understand a horse getting a bunch of treats and, you know, attention or whatever and being like, oh, I did good.
Yeah. But do we think that horses have the cognitive function to say, like, it was for that pass act, though? Like I mean, underestimating the horse and their cognitive ability, because I think, like, the horse would be like, oh, cool, I now have this giant heavy thing of flowers on me, and this guy won't get off my back.
I feel like horses probably understand the idea of a race, because that seems like a pretty primitive, primal kind of thing. Like,
do you think horses understand races? I don't.
Yeah, I think if you have five horses in the wild and they're running around, there's probably a conception of, hey, who can run faster than who? That makes sense to me.
Well, I mean, like,
animals.
That's pretty primal.
That's like a competition, but comparing that to like the Kentucky Derby, man, that's like comparing like the first person to actually create fire to like a flamethrower. Like,
I was really excited about where this analogy was going.
they're basically the same thing, almost exactly the same. Anyway, The horse doesn't know that you named a street after it because it doesn't
understand
streets. Also, the horse is dead. just seems super insane to me to name a street after a dead animal.
Who's
It's like, you love a horse? I don't. It's a horse. I don't. It's not your horse. It's a famous horse. Someone else's. Yeah. Someone else's horse.
I loved that for years. I don't know if he still does this, but Tony Kornheiser would claim that Secretariat was the greatest athlete in the history of sports.
He does have a good point, though, to be fair.
I mean, Secretariat was insanely...
Because Secretariat would get its ass whooped in the decathlon.
Well, that's a fair point.
Let me see Secretariat throw a javelin.
Yeah,
what
that's
about
what
I'm the decaf, Alon?
Okay, the show's over. We're done with the show.
Off.
I'm
yeah,
leaving the show.
Just,
all right, we're ending the podcast
boo.
Now.
Just boo.
Well, Nate and Mike might want to delete that joke, but they're going to have to choose other things to delete. So, Nate, what was your least favorite thing this week? What do you want to delete from the show?
Well, I spoiled this on Twitter. Have complained about this multiple times in the past, I think. 80% of the stories in this promotion are a guy about to leave his stable, betraying his stable, leaving his stable, maybe joining another stable. That's all the stories are. There's no other stories. On this episode alone, you had, who do we have? We had the Pinnacle, you know, MJF following up on him betraying the Inner Circle and starting the Pinnacle. That was an annoying one. Miro and Kip Sabian are beginning the road to them breaking up as a tag team. Dark Order has Hangman, will they or won't they, doing that
team,
again.
Team Taz.
Meanwhile, I'm saving the big one for last.
Oh, sorry, bud.
The Elite, the Young Bucks again, are on the outs with the Elite and the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega. And it's, are they going to break up with them? They didn't do the too sweet with them. Going around in circles on that. Team Taz, the hot stable in the company, the one everyone loves. These stables have been together for like a year at most. And it's just as soon as one story ends, it's like, okay, who can we turn on who? Who can turn and break away from this stable? Now we have Brian Cage deciding he respects Sting, and there's tension in Team Taz, and everybody's mad at him now. I would just like to see, like, let's have some continuity. Let's have some stables that just stay together and, like, make a long-lasting imprint in the history of the company, and let's not just hotshot leaving and joining and staying and leaving and one fucking thing after another. There's more I will probably think of as the show goes on. I'll interrupt you guys to say what they are. But, you know, we just seen it with the Elite so many times. Oh, fucking QT Marshall, the Nightmare Family. Like, we have to do this story with QT also. Just need a greater variety of stories with everyone on the show.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, I do like the idea that things should be fluid, that, like, you shouldn't necessarily have, like, one set group from begin to finish, but, like, having all this at once is just, it muddles the idea that, and also for, like, the Team FTW thing, that requires people to have watched at least one of the two-hour shows that they had over the last 48 hours beforehand, and know that there's discord going on between Ricky Starks and Brian Cage over their match they had on Dark. So, like, it's not effective when you have so much of this happening at once. At the same time, it's also not as effective if you just, like, build things up and it's not necessarily on something where the vast majority of your viewership is watching. So it's something that... And maybe this is just me being a little bit too much on my bullshit here, but I would like the idea, and they haven't really done this other than, like, SEU, like, claiming if they lose, they're never going to fight again. Do, like, a disbands match. This whole, like, Sting and Darby and FTW thing, since it seems to be continuing when it felt like it had a pretty good conclusion at Revolution. Like, have it that's like, all right, so if Team FTW loses, then Taz gets his manager's license revoked and they must all, and they lose their affiliation and Team FTW is no more. Like, don't just have, like, oh, suddenly Brian Cage decides he respects Sting. Don't have QT Marshall just after, like, weeks of him just kind of being a jerk off, just, like, coming up late when Cody was hurt. Like, have some more variety to it in some fashions here, because it's just, you have so much of the same thing and then you loses, it loses all of its impact at that point.
Yeah, I would. The Dragon Gate tool of doing that is great, where you have, it's an easy way to give, you know, a big match, big stakes without having it be for a title, and also involving like 10 people instead of two people, those sort of steps. The problem is there's not enough continuity in this promotion by a long shot for those steps to mean anything. Like right now, Team Taz versus whoever, Nightmare Family Unit disbands match, would be like, okay, yeah, you know, I guess there's some big stakes here because, you know, Cody's a main event guy over here and Team Taz has been pushed, but it's like all these stables are a year old. So just, can we establish these things, have some continuity so they're meaningful before we start shaking them all up?
Yeah, and I definitely didn't need a new stable with MJF and friends. I don't know. It's not my delete, but I just hated that whole fucking segment. So,
well, let's talk about it, because it's my delete.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Oh, that's your delete, Mike? Well, tear it up, buddy.
Oh, I thought David had something else he was going to add in before we moved on.
I'm going to defend it, so just go.
Okay. It's something where, like, they mirrored the Pinnacle's formation, completely mirrored the Inner Circle as much that it loses its effect. It loses because, like, it's all right being reflective. I think that that's a smart thing, like the way that they kind of did the reveal, and just like the idea that MJF spent the last few months like playing possum basically and then played his trump card last week. But it's something that it lost its effect, and then you have, at least in this group, three people or three wrestlers that for the most part have underwhelmed, in my opinion, in their promotion, and were not really given enough of a reason to now care about them being this big bad stable with it. And then MJF's, like, all of his promos, when it's under 2 minutes, they're usually very solid, but the longer that he goes on the microphone, the less it loses its effect until the end. Like, I felt like the comment he made about Chris Jericho at the end was this, but it was something that, like, with how the show was going in this whole first hour, like, you had a Cody versus Penta, which was a bad roll-up finish. You had Bucks and Callis, and then very quickly you had Jade and Cargill, and you had Jade Cargill and Danny Jordan. But then you had, like, this promo here that kind of like just ground things to a halt, that I felt like, in a way, that momentum, and when Dynamite really feels like it's flowing, especially these tape Dynamites, the less that they have these talking segments, the less that they kind of grind to a halt. And I felt like having 10 minutes basically saying, hey, this is why we're all together, and basically copycatting what Jericho did on week 2 of Dynamite with Inner Circle, just kind of like, if this is supposed to be this big unit and then going after the locker rooms, like, this is ours now, and putting it on there, like, I don't get, like, what the emotional effect is supposed to be for the viewer. And to me, I feel like that made this segment, especially after, like, the breakup and the split that happened last week, I feel like it makes the I feel like the follow-up kind of, like, lessens how this unit's supposed to be portrayed.
Yeah, no, I like that it mirrored the Inner Circle's little introductory angle segment or whatever that they did on the show. And I thought that was a good way to sort of differentiate it from the Inner Circle, because MJF specifically shouted out, you know, I did your little comedy bullshit and all your little sketches and stuff, which is stuff that we've complained about. And I thought that was a good way to distinguish this group from that group, that they're not going to be doing wacky comedy segments or whatever. It's like pretty much 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys that are like supposed to be straight ahead, mean jerks or whatever. So, you know, I get not being high on the guys, because, you know, of the three of us, I think Wardlow is maybe the one guy that we're all actually high on, and the other ones are, like, you know, various levels of tolerable. But they've been established and protected pretty well in the company. Like, FTR was very protected and tag team champions, and had, you know, other people will say, like, the second best tag team of the year, tag team match of the year in this promotion. You know, MJF been pushed pretty much as a star from the outset. So, you know, your mileage will vary on how much you enjoy an MJF talking to camera promo. I thought this was one of his better ones, mostly because he wasn't being too cute or twee about it. He was just, like, angry And that's what FDR has excelled at also, is like, don't, you know, you don't need to get complex or talk around things. Just like stare down the camera and yell at it, and it kind of works for him. So if they go in that direction with it, I think it's probably an improvement for all the guys involved. And again, if it's all the setup, the big Wardlow star turn, then that's the best outcome.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying for sure. I think MJF is bad at doing these long promos. I just think they're not good. They don't entertain me in any way. Whoever said in the chat, he's unstoppable on the mic, all right? Yeah, I agree with that. Completely unstoppable. But also, it's like the whole gimmick is supposed to be, they're trying to do this Four Horsemen thing where they're like in suits, but everybody but Wardlow, I mean, MJF looks fine. Everybody else looks shitty. It's like, no, you look fucking dumb. Like, I know that you are just dying to be, you know, in the 80s. You all feel like you were born past your time, but you're missing the point of what they were actually doing. And you got Tully Blanchard right there to tell you, to smarten you up on what the point was. I mean, you're supposed to look like you're literally, MJF's line, that you're better than everyone else and you know it, that you got tons of money and you got all the women and blah, blah, blah. And other than Wardlow, they just don't really put that across. So I think that's a real downfall for this group.
Yeah, I mean, FTR, you can believe they just don't want to wear a suit at any time. Like, oh, I want to wear my, you know, white t-shirt or whatever. Now, do they look worse than Evolution's original entrance movie vignette where they're all walking to camera in very large oversized suits?
That's differing levels, right? That looked very bad, but it was also very funny.
Okay. Yeah.
Hard to like take myself back in time and be like, oh, did right. I think they looked cool in 2000, whatever. I don't know.
I watched the whole 9 yards over the last couple of days.
Sure.
Matthew Perry's suits in that were fucking outrageous. They were draped off him. It's like they were melting off his body, these giant suits.
Yes, I guess that's my thing. It's like, I appreciate on some level, because I like a lot of the same shit that these guys like, of like wanting to pay tribute to like some of this stuff from before. But like, put your own spin on it, you know, like do your own thing. And you're right, Nate, that like FTR should not be two guys in suits. Like, that doesn't make any sense for their characters. So why not just do your own thing?
And it's something where like this unit is all really built around the idea that Tully Blanchard like mentored Sean Spears and mentored FTR. Like, there's your cognitive tissue right there. They could have very easily been like, oh, Tully is someone that I have consulted with my entire career from MJF. And then you would have like a good line of cognitive tissue there that just doesn't really exist.
Yeah, I mean, as I guess we said before, it's nice to have all these people in one unit so I don't have to think about them. And even when they did the step off the jet thing, they zoomed in on Wardlow at the end. So like, I have some hope that this is all going to be about making Wardlow into a star, and I'm on board for that.
Yeah, man, it's going to be Batista turning on Evolution. It's Wardlow turning on Pinnacle. I think Pinnacle is a pretty good name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been worse.
I'm optimistic about it.
Here's my delete. It's St. Patrick's Day, folks.
Sorry, let me amend that.
God damn it, Nate.
I'm optimistic about it, except that it's going to be another fucking guy betraying his stable storyline.
Yes.
So that's going to be annoying. It's like, oh, yeah, now Wardlow's breaking up Pinnacle. Who could have fucking thunk it?
But if he does thumbs down, it's okay. I'm deleting St. Patrick's Day. It's the worst and dumbest holiday. I hate everything about it. I don't have anything nice to say about the Irish, and I don't have anything nice to say about St. Patrick's Day. Get your fucking green beer and get the fuck out of here. Get green is an objectively awful color. Don't wear it. It's bad. It's just like the dumbest excuse for a holiday from the dumbest people on the planet, and I fucking hate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not sure where that came from.
I've always hated St. Patrick's Day. It's typified by fucking Joe Biden getting on TV or whatever today and being like, well, the Irish people know about racism because we're Irish. No,
he's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my take on St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
Fair.
Well, let's keep it moving.
I don't have any comment to offer to that. Or to be honest, it's.
Yeah. Go.
All right, listener. Okay. Delete. Rebel not blading. This is from. WFI. Rebel not blading. Lack of commitment as an assistant. Have to agree.
I said when the match started. In a chat or whatever, I just need Rebel to take a big bump, and she took a big bump, and she took it bigger than like Chris Jericho took his big off the apron bumps. So Rebel did enough for me personally.
Rebel was great here. She ruled. Loved her jacket. We saw Wardlow et al. Getting off a private jet earlier in the day. We were right into Pentagon versus Cody, and Cody. I forget who said this, but won the match in the most Cody ass way by roll up.
Can't believe we didn't delete this.
Yeah, we should have.
This was definitely the worst individual thing on the show. My delete was a collective pattern with the promotion that's been going back months. But I said in the show last week, like, Cody should not be a guy who's getting, flash trap pins on people to show that he's the savvier wrestler. And that's how he should be. The baby face who like beats guys with his moves. When you're doing a storyline about how he's got a torn shoulder or whatever, and he sits out half the pay-per-view match because they have to do a siesta for Cody's shoulder and make that the big drama of the match. And then he comes in here and like, you can like, that's the perfect reason to have Pentagon do his big arm breaker spot, which was super fucking over in Lucha Underground and made the guy a star basically. That's and needs a win in this promotion, needs a push in this promotion. And they can't give him that because Cody has to do this stupid roll up. Hated it, made me mad. Almost made me mad through a lot of the rest of the show. I will say, something I said a while ago about Okada was, aces sometimes have to win matches that they shouldn't win. Like, if you're the ace of the promotion, there are sometimes when you should lose a match and you should put a guy over and drop the belt or whatever and do a different story. But what makes the guy an ace is even losing or even winning those matches. It's like Okada beating Naito is like, no, Okada is the ace. Like John Cena is the ace because he wins matches that he should lose, in storyline or as a exercise in booking or whatever. So, I guess that's the thing with Cody is he's an ace or something, but I don't know. He's lost other matches to people. You can fucking put over Pentagon.
And it's something where like the presentation and the quick buildup to this with Alex Abrahantes, like being like living his truth, like being a, like, I think that now he can maybe be a manager and be translating for Death Triangle if they ever really wanted to, and I feel like that would come off like really cool, but it's something where like this was a match that very much
I really hate that idea. I hate that. Is the QVC guy like speaking for PAC is the worst thing I've ever heard.
I'm referring to more about Lucha Brothers, like, because like their hesitance there and the way that
he's got such QVC television pitch man energy. He's so uncool.
Works though.
No, it doesn't. I hate it.
I think it rocks, but
I think it would kill them.
I mean, I think that as soon as the bell rang, it's still going to be Pentagon and Phoenix. I don't think that that's going to completely change their whole entire trajectory. I think that's a cute wrinkle for them to have, but it's something where like what could have been a delete for me is having roll-ups that aren't like good flash pins. They're just like, oh, LOL, Cody wins, or Mox gets the win out of nowhere, and then immediately doing beatdowns. Like, it kind of became a trend here, and it kind of, it undercuts a lot of things on the show.
Also, it makes Mike mad because I always say roll-ups are bad. So when there's actually a bad one, Mike's like, God damn it, Aaron's going to celebrate this.
There's a difference here, and I'm able to recognize that you just haven't seen a lot of good ones. And instead, you see Cody going,
that's because
LOL.
There aren't any good ones. That's why I haven't seen many good
ones. I can't believe you're speaking... ill of both the Itabashi and the backslide from heaven. I am just offended.
I have to. Yeah, there was an attack afterward. Dustin Rhodes of the Gun Club made the save. Penno's making his way back up the tunnel, cross paths with QT. The others are wondering where QT was. Whose side is he on? Alex Marvez with the Young Bucks. Matt's talking about Fenix beating each of them in singles matches, but that doesn't matter because they're the tag champs. Don Callis interrupts, tries to give them a t-shirt for Papa Buck that has the Gabe XT do not slap leg while kicking sign.
Hey, I was drinking a water and taking my time. Like, to do the QT thing, can't you just, like, make him a heel in the group for a while first and, like, spread out some of these stable dissolution betrayal storylines? Like, just have him be kind of the dick in the tag team for, like, a while instead of going right to, oh, he's, you know, he's letting the rest of his stable down. Just, you know, have him be an asshole, but in the same unit. That's fine.
Also, it's like, it's QT Marshall. Who gives a fuck? Like, there... You're doing this story in five other places. It's not like you need something to be happening with QT Marshall. You can do it anytime.
Right. I mean, I you know, it's clear that QT is like a Cody guy and they want to give him something to do, which is like, that's fine. I'm down to see what they can get out of QT and what they can make work with him. And he, you know, he's good as a heel on the vlogs, and I assume that's why they think they want to turn him heel. But just it, you know, at the wrong pace and at the wrong time when you're doing it with 10 other people. The leg slapping thing, they're trying to make too much hay of the leg slapping thing. They've done like three different bits on BTE about the leg slapping thing. They did a bit on the pay-per-view about the leg slapping thing. They're doing a t-shirt about the leg slapping thing. I don't know. Just the WWE stupid non-controversy things don't hit the timeline for the same way for me anymore, that you can make this much of a big deal about the leg slapping thing. It's like, nobody cares what's going on over there. So, you know, I don't need it, I guess.
Yes, I also don't care. Callis admits he was faking the eye thing, but he wanted them to kick him to show more of the old Young Bucks. He says there's nothing elite about them anymore. Kenny doesn't recognize them for the same reason. You're just another tag team with fancy tights living off your name. So when you look in the mirror at night, do you see the same Nick and Matt I saw in New Japan? As many people have commented, they're the fucking tag team champions. What's the point of this?
Also, in New Japan, their thing was that they would always eat shit at the end of all their feuds, and they were not going out and kicking ass all the time. They were like the obnoxious little juniors running around and stealing a belt for a little run and then losing it back at the end of the tour. I'm just going to tear about the whole show now, I guess. The fucking eye thing is like they did all that, and now it's, oh, yeah, I was faking that. It's like, okay, so you didn't have an idea for it in the first place, and you were going to have Don fake the eye thing, and then everybody kind of forgot about it, and then it's like, oh, yeah, that happened. It was nothing. I don't know. Half-assed.
Yeah, it sucks. Jade Cargo beat Danny Jordan with the Jaded, is what they're calling this move.
Ooh, she should have Aerosmith's Jaded as her entrance theme.
That's a great call, Nate.
Great late-era Aerosmith song.
Yeah.
I remember the music video played on VH1 like nonstop for about a good 8 months.
Was that the Alicia Silverstone Liv Tyler one?
No, I think that was before that. This was after.
I was jaded. I was gonna. Well, see, Nate, I was gonna belt it out, but it's like that's a fucking high song. I would have embarrassed myself had I tried to do it. Nate, really, you stepped it down a few octaves there, yeah, smartly. Well, you could have belted it out, no doubt about it. I've heard Nate.
No, I can't get up to that register.
Afterwards, Jade stepped to Red Velvet ringside, who tried to come at her, but they were both held back. Sorry, folks, can't believe Bryce Ribsburg can hold back Jade Cargo. Not happening. They need more manpower.
She should eat him.
She should eat Bryce Ribsburg. Yes, I agree. They did the Pinnacle segment. Yeah, next, which we've already discussed. And we had Matt Hardy, Private Party, Butcher and the Blade versus Jurassic Express and Bear Country. Matt Hardy pinned Marco Stunt with the Twist of Fate after Private Party hit the Gin and Juice. He demanded to be tagged in. After the match, Jurassic Express and Bear Country were not happy with each other.
Bear Country yeeting Marco Stunt was really rad. That was like my favorite part of this match. The rest of it was just fine.
All right, we had Mox and Eddie backstage. We talked about this already. Then Dasha was backstage with Christian Cage, who said he's the workhorse. And for anyone worried, I'm coming in to take your spot. The only spot I'm interested in is Kenny's. As champ, you're on borrowed time.
It's very funny to be like, I'm not here to take anybody's spot except the very top spot in the company. I actually want that one.
Yeah. Now, he did say he's going to need to get some wins and build up his resume a little bit, but he came here to cement his legacy.
He looks really young. He looks like...
He looks good.
He makes Edge look like a zombie walking the earth, comparatively. Because Edge looks like actual death. Christian looks like a young man.
Christian looks like a dad. Edge looks like a great-granddad.
Kara is litigating the roll-up argument in the chat, and she's right, except Kara. I've watched quite a bit more wrestling than our pal Nimmy Boo. just an excuse for me to say Nimmy Moo. John Moxley, Eddie Kingston versus the Good Brothers. The Good Brothers attacked Eddie before the bell. Mox, I'm not sure why they were coming out separately. They're a team. They should come out together. Mox pinned Carl Anderson with the inside cradle. After the match, the Good Brothers attacked Mox. Kenny came out with Don Callis and a chair. He sat down in the chair. Kingston was kind of able to sneak past everybody and knock Kenny out of the chair, but he got beaten down by everybody. The Bucks came out. But whose side are they on? And they refuse to do the famous hand sign. Omega pushes Matt Jackson.
Was it a notorious hand sign? Or the notorious hand sign?
I don't know.
I thought it was famous.
Might be famous.
Who knows at this point? Tony is with Sting and Darby. Darby says he's mad that he's only defended the TNT title 3 times. Me too, Darbs. Like, I agree. I'm glad Darby's a listener of the show. And he says now that everything's done with Team Taz, he wants to defend the title week in and week out. He wants to start by paying tribute to the greatest TNT champion of all time. So he makes an open challenge to the Dark Order. Lance Archer interrupts. He calls Darby indie-rific and says, you like coffin so much, I'll put you in a coffin. And then Jake Roberts goes for the AB joke of the week by saying something about Darby putting on a hot dog bun because he's a weenie man.
He also he said something about turning something sideways and sticking it up somebody's candy ass, but it wasn't clear what he was talking about exactly.
It was not.
Just Lance Archer is kind of a unique case. He's kind of like maybe a little Sid Vicious energy, Psycho Sid, because he like says everything really passionately and feels sincere and genuine and has good pro wrestler energy for it. But it doesn't feel like he has great ideas for what he's going to say. So that's a funny tension. On the subject of Darby listening to the show, we were talking about Rick Rubin today, and if you watch his AEW, I just want to say, Rick Rubin, if you're listening and you want to signal that to us without blowing up your spot, follow Nimmy Moo on Twitter, and that will be the sign. Thanks, Rick Rubin.
I couldn't agree more. All right, Taz also wasn't happy. He comes out. Brian Cage does not want Taz speaking for him. He's mad at Sting, but wait a second. He's not mad at Sting. He actually respects him. Ricky Starks is wrong. You're still the icon. The rest of Team Taz is mad. A lot of people are mad on this show. Scorpio Sky has a pretty tape. I just be happy. You know, I go by the ice ribbon slogan, be happy with pro wrestling. And there was not a lot of happiness with pro wrestling on this show. Scorpio Sky got a pre-tape. He says he's not wanted here. They want people like Cody. He thought he was the exception of nice guys finishing last, but he learned that he's not. He's finally got his chance when he won the ladder match, but that was just a moment for Darby. And he's mad because he's a wrestling savant, another mad person on this show. Yeah, this was whatever. FedEx versus Angelico. And FedEx wins with the Fire Thunder Driver so that they could do... I'm not sure if it's 2 weeks in a row, but two shows in recent memory where the Fire Thunder Driver won 2 matches on the show.
It's a very cool move.
It is cool. It's cool as shit.
It's a great name.
Yeah. Most powerful move in all of wrestling. And, you know, I bet it makes Onita happy.
Alex Marvez. Alex is busy on these taped shows. My man is running around all over. On these taped shows.
He was all over Elevation too. Like, he is now their go-to guy here. And it's like, hey, Alex Marvez here, and I'm here with the Young Bucks.
It's like Kermit the Frog there. But
I was just
he's fine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He seems fine to me. I was amused. Lanza did a tweet the other day that I was like, some people are way too hard on Sean Spears. Like he's taking up all this time or something. Like he's a perfectly good hand for where he is on the card or whatever. I was like, didn't you used to call him stealing money, Alex Marvez? Like this guy's totally inoffensive. Like his job is not that important. No problems with Alex Marvez.
He's fine. He catches up with Miro, who's doing pull-ups. Miro, not clear why he would want to do a rematch with Chuck and Orange Cassidy. He says he knows Chuck is trying to sweeten the deal with that lifetime butlership. but he's moved on, which it's like AEW could use more of people moving on from feuds. But they shan't do that. Kip Sabian says he hasn't moved on. Kip is like... Tony. He's like the stand-in for Tony, right? Of like, no, actually, sorry, I haven't moved on from this. They ruined my wedding. And also, Miro, you hurt my wife. So like, what the fuck? I want to team with you again because you hurt my wife. And Miro says, hey, the worst thing that can happen to your career is having your wife at ringside. Which, you know, stiff shots from Miro. Says all he wants to be is world champion. He doesn't really care about this. Kip, I love this. Kip says, that's what I want too. For you to be world champion.
Like, yeah, what he's a good friend. Kip Sabian doesn't want to be world champion. Kip Sabian has maxed out by marrying Penelope Ford. He has done and beyond what he needed to do in this life. So if his buddy can be world champion too, and he can, you know, celebrate afterward, he's doing just fine.
This somehow apparently meant that they'd accept it, and so the tag match is going to happen. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, more discord in the unit, in the gamer unit. Miro, you know, Miro is like, it pops off the screen every time he's on. So I, for sure, you know, can't really complain about anything they do with him.
Next, Alex Marvez is with the Dark Order, and they do have the Hangman thing, but there's no discord among the Dark Order. So,
right.
That, you know, the Allen Angels thing was just a one-off where he was mad he didn't get on the lawnmower. So I think it's fine.
Well, that's an every week thing on BTE really, but
right.
He's the whipping boy of the stable.
They're trying to figure out who's going to accept Darby's challenge. Negative One wants to accept the challenge, but Uno says maybe in 10 years. And then he asks who wants to. Everybody raises their hand, but it seems like Uno picked John Silver, who will be challenging Darby Allin.
Well, Alex volunteered him again because Alex liked Kip, a very good friend, and was like, how about John? And then that was enough. He was the only person to get two votes. Everyone else voted for themselves and got one vote.
That makes sense. I like that. I like friendship.
Yeah.
I like violence. I like friendship. And I like being happy with pro wrestling.
That's all you need.
That's all you need in this life. MJF turns the Inner Circle locker room into the Pinnacles locker room. Are they going to do a locker room brawl? You think that's going to be an upcoming match on AEW Dynamite on TNT?
I think
hopefully not. Mostly because their locker rooms are just conference rooms, so they're not very colorful places.
I think that as they're one to do, I think that there's going to be a mediation session between Pinnacle and the Inner Circle about ownership of said locker room, so they can have another just 10-minute long Jericho and MJF thing.
Just fucking fight. Just do violence.
Mega is the official
mediator. Absolutely, yeah.
I want to see a multi-purpose room mayhem match. That's like the least exciting room you can do a match in.
Then we close things out with the lights out, unsanctioned match on our television program. Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa. Rosa won with the Fire Thunder Driver through a table off the apron. Killer finish. Really couldn't get Britt pinned because of the table. Britt's like half under the ring during all this. It ruled. It was great. All right. Well, that was Dynamite this week. If you like the show, you want to support our show, this show, not Dynamite. I mean, if you like Dynamite, also probably important, head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. We've got three tiers. The big difference is the middle tier, the $5 tier, gets you all the audio we do, but the $8 tier gets you the live Dynamite or whatever, this show that we do.
You can be in the chat while we talk and distract us. You can muse about whether Rick Rubin might like Little Witch Academia. It's everything you could possibly want at an $8 Patreon subscription.
Absolutely. And remember that you don't have to necessarily listen live. It sticks up on YouTube and you can still check it out before it gets up on our main feed. We do basically at least one show a week. We do Light, where we preview Dynamite. Nate breaks down the vlogs. This week we did a fun little mailbag where we answered a lot of listener questions. Trying to think of what got the most response in the Discord. Like, what was the really the fun question that we answered on the show? I've put everybody on the spot. They look terrified.
I think probably the Mudo stuff probably got the most reaction. Yeah.
That was good. We talked about Mudo's GHC reign for sure.
I'm going back in the Discord to see.
Notably, none of us watch Noah, so, and we talked about the Mudo GHC reign for 20 minutes or whatever.
Well, I was mostly talking about, again, Cyber Agent Corporate and their content strategies. So you sort of have to take, you know, Muta, you know, if you're not factoring in how he has synergy with the horse girl idols, then you're really not doing the job.
That's right.
So that's what you come to us for.
So we did that. Mike did an Elevation instant reaction on Monday night. So that's up there. We got the Discord. I've got an episode of Mixtape Club probably coming out this month. It might end up in April, but I'm hoping to squeeze it out in March. I think I can confirm now that it'll be with Murder Brian. So Brian will come back to the Everything Elite Patreon. It's been a while, and I'm going to have him talk about Christian metalcore. So I'm very pleased about that. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Really popped yourself?
I did. I think it's funny to make Brian talk about Christian music. That makes me laugh. The Spears Boys will probably give us some shows on the student showcase shows. We got it's not Nightmare Family Showcase. What do we got coming up?
Apparently there is a Nightmare Factory one coming real soon. And then Dustin, I forget what he calls his school. He's
Rhodes
doing one.
Rhodes Wrestling Academy, maybe?
Yeah, I think Rhodes Wrestling Academy is it. So Drew and I both weirdly like sub-indie wrestling and also watching like brand new wrestlers and see how things going. And, you know, we're going to figure out that we've talked about it. We've dropped links to each other. It's just kind of sitting down and deciding when we're going to record that.
Yeah, so we got plenty of stuff, so check that out, patreon.com/everythingelite. Next week on Dynamite, here's what we know. We're going to get a rematch from the AW Women's Tournament, Nyla Rose versus Ty Conti. FTR and Sean Spears will take on the Varsity Blondes and Dante Martin. Really worried about Dante Martin's exposure to the Varsity Blondes here. Having seen that Griff is apparently... Steven Crowder or something he followed on Instagram. Very worried for Dante here. The TNT title, Darby Allin will take on.
Worried about Dante. I'm worried that Griff Garrison is half-assed parenting -1 at this point. If you watch the Sammy Guevara vlog.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say I watched the Sammy Guevara vlog, but that does concern me. Darby Allin versus John Silver should be a blast. Kenny Omega versus Matt Sydal in a match that was set up on Elevation, a show that I will almost certainly never watch again.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was actually like on Twitter. They had a match, and I forgot about this. They had a match in Bola 2014 that was really solid. So I'm looking forward to this one, and it's apparently another title eliminator match. If Matt Sydal wins, then he gets a title shot. I don't know when in the future, but apparently he would.
Yeah, this kind of just feels like a thing. It's like Kenny's like, I want to wrestle Matt Sydal. Can we do a little 2-week program with Matt Sydal? It's like, yeah, those are going to be good and cool.
A good way to kill time heading into like your next pay-per-view cycle.
Give him a title defense. Yeah,
I don't mind it at all.
It might not actually be a title defense, but you know,
it might not. But you know, we'll see. But yeah, they've got to. I don't know what they're going to do for what's next. Double or Nothing, is that going to be the next pay-per-view?
Yes.
It has to be, right? May is Double or Nothing. So I don't know what the direction will be for that. But yeah, you got to find a way to kill some time before that. God knows they're not going to tell us a 2.5-month story before they take us in a Double or Nothing. So,
well, they might, but you know, 8 of the segments will be the exact same thing.
I loved that Tony had an interview. He was like, I think this Britt Baker Thunder Rosa story is the best story we've ever told. And I'm like, I can't, it's been a pretty good story, but it's like, not that great. And like
and
the
pretty
overall...
simple.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm not complaining about simple. Like simple is, it's sure. obviously been effective, but.
But they've forgotten about it for like weeks at a time. Like it's just disappeared. So I'm like, yeah, well, maybe that says something more about your other stories, Tony, than it really says about this story. But anyway, that'll be the show on Dynamite next week. Mike and I will preview that on Light next Wednesday morning. So make sure you subscribe to the Patreon. So you can check that out, patreon.com/everythingelite. Make sure you go over to MyBookie. Use the promo code ELITE to get your deposit bonus. Anything else, guys, before we get out of here?
I got
nothing else.
All right. Follow us on Twitter at everythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. And I already did the other plug. So for Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.